As a way to honor all of the mothers on here, from now through Mother's Day weekend, you can grab the My Essential Birth course and get the new bonus birth affirmations track, plus matching birth affirmation cards, and get entered to win one of three goodies from Dockatot. Or you can be one of the first five to bundle and save, grabbing the My Essential Birth and postpartum course, and I will personally send you a handmade 100% muslin cotton belly bind with your bonus tutorial video. Plus, you get all the bonuses from before: the birth affirmation track, matching birth affirmation cards, and you get entered to win one of three goodies from Dockatot, totaling $247 worth of goodies. Head to myessentialbirth.com/get-started and join me in the birth course today. Happy Mother's Day. Women have been giving birth for centuries, so it's a pretty natural experience, right? Wrong. I'm Stephanie King, professional doula, childbirth educator, and the creator of the My Essential Birth course, the online childbirth education course that's helping women everywhere confidently achieve their best birth. Today's culture would have us think that birth should be treated like an illness or an emergency, and that most of us need other people telling us what's best for our bodies because we aren't the experts. So sit tight, because if you're tuning into this podcast, you'll probably start to believe in your body, your intuition, and find yourself empowered and confident to do what it takes to have the birth of your dreams. If you like listening to me take you through these weekly topics step by step, then you're going to love the My Essential Birth course. Make sure that you're subscribed to the podcast and definitely head over to myessentialbirth.com for the free downloads mentioned right here in these episodes, and to join the birth course and community full of pregnant moms just like you. I have to add a disclaimer that I am not a medical professional and I cannot provide medical advice. All of the information expressed in this podcast are based off of personal, professional, and educational experiences and are my own opinions. Please work with a provider you trust for medical advice during your pregnancy and birth. All right, this week's reviewer of the week is KLSid86. She says, the best birth podcast. I've listened to hundreds, if not thousands, of hours of birth podcasts in the past 5 years. I'm pregnant with my second and a self-confessed birth nerd. Join the club. I only recently found this podcast, and I have to say it's quickly become my favorite. A great mix of information and humor. I appreciate every episode. I don't know that I could ask for a better review for that. Somebody who has listened to hundreds, if not thousands, of birth podcasts, hours of birth podcasts, and you're loving this one. So thank you for being a part of this. Thank you for leaving the review. And I'm so excited because we've got another awesome episode here today. I have with me Bonnie. I went to write an intro and I'm like, you guys should know her if you've been listening. She was on here with me not too long ago. We talked about informed consent. We talked about doulas. She's a doula, an up-and-coming midwife. She just had a baby. In fact, last time she was on our podcast, she was pregnant, and now she's just gorgeously not pregnant. So we're excited to have her back, but I am really excited because as long as I've known Bonnie within the birth world, at least it was very shortly after, if anything, she started doing placenta encapsulation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I know this is a huge topic for any mom who is pregnant, but especially those of you that are listening. Like, I know this comes up in the community all the times. That's a thing.
All the times.
But also within the birth course. You moms that are in the birth course, this is a constant question. Like, what about the placenta? And I love that it's a question now, because I think even when we started doing birth stuff, which was not that long ago. Wink, wink. Okay. When we started doing birth stuff a little bit ago, it wasn't this like big popular thing. In fact, it was the first time I had even heard about it was when I started teaching birth classes and people started talking about placenta encapsulation. So anyways, I'm excited for you to be back. I'm excited to talk about this.
I'm excited to be back.
Yay. So let's dive in. What is, maybe we'll just start off with, what is placenta encapsulation?
Well, in, you know, a nutshell, placenta encapsulation is the process of taking the placenta for the client. They could do it themselves, I suppose, but generally someone is trained in it, and they take the placenta, clean it, prepare it, and dry it, put it into pills, and then the mom takes it. So it's a little bit more of a friendlier version than what people used to do before the pills, you know, came onto the scene. I think in the 70s was when they decided to actually, you know, turn it into a pill, like a supplement. It felt easier for women to take a pill versus chomp it or, you know.
Yeah.
Okay, talk background, because now I am sitting here and I know moms are going to be wondering, like, where did this come from? Like, we know, maybe you know, animals eat their placentas after they give birth. Mm-hmm. So that's a thing. And there are benefits to that. So then we kind of decided to start doing this ourselves, or maybe explain that.
Well, so they, it, you know, there are reports or history, you know, they it, in history from like 1400 years ago in China, there are reports of people consuming placenta. In Europe, that went all the way back. I think this, they say the first one reported placenta consumption, since it wasn't pills, wasn't encapsulation back then, but it was placenta consumption, was in 1556 in Europe.
Wow.
Yeah. And there's, you know, lots of healing properties that they really believed. A lot of people will talk about traditional Chinese medicine, and that has, there's a lot of roots with placenta encapsulation in TCM. Mm-hmm. And, but there are so many different cultures. It's not just Chinese that were utilizing it. In the medieval times, they believed that the placenta was the, they called that the bed of the child, and mm-hmm. that it would provide comfort to the baby. And like, you know, keep it comfy, keep it company while, you know, they were in utero. In Indonesia, they believe that the placenta is the brother or the sister of the baby. And so they would say that when, you know, you get those cute little baby smiles when they're dreaming, when they're asleep, when they're tiny little babies, they used to say that that was them, their souls playing with each other. The soul of the placenta and the soul of the baby were playing together, which I think is kind of like a really cute, yeah. you know, cute thing. In the Pacific Islands, they would bury the placenta in the garden to ensure that they would be a, the baby would be a good gardener later in life. So they would, it would, it, you know, to promote health and longevity. And I find it really interesting too, some of these beliefs, like in Sumatra, they would put the placenta in a clay pot and give it to the river to prevent the baby from having cold hands and feet later in life, which I think is also just kind of, you know, not superstitious, but, you know, they had these like beliefs surrounding it.
And traditions behind mm-hmm, it. Mm-hmm. That is interesting. And just the general regard for the sanctity of it.
Yeah.
Like the special, like it's yeah. special in some way, which mm-hmm. is super neat, which it is.
Yeah.
Right. We grow an entire organ yeah. for our baby. So
it is. It's amazing.
Yeah.
They, in fact, in the, anthropologists have found that clear back in the 17th and 18th centuries, there were specific pots that were not used for anything else. And those pots, they would put the placenta in those pots and bury them around their homes. Mm-hmm. And all of these anthropologists found them and they, you know, figured that out. They're like, this is just for the placenta, these really wow. special
that's interesting.
Pots. And they were really adorned. They weren't just like, it wasn't just like a standard clay pot.
Yeah, so, that's really neat.
Yeah.
And I like the background.
Yeah. And warriors would eat them to make them stronger okay. in ancient times.
I'll stop you there. So, yeah. I love it. Okay, I have to wonder, mm-hmm. kind of United States version, and maybe you do, maybe you don't know the complete history here, mm-hmm. but it makes me wonder, I feel like we probably did some more natural things prior to everybody heading to the hospital to give mm-hmm. birth to their babies.
Yeah.
So was that something that you found prior to those hospital, those early 1900 years, that even here in the United States, that there were things with the placenta, either consumption or different traditions that they did before we ended up in the hospital and it was discarded as medical waste?
You know, a lot of that is kind of surrounding like European history from what I know. Sure. I think that it probably translated the same over here, but I don't know necessarily like the depth of,
yeah.
of like, I guess we would be talking about like early settlers and Native American, and I don't know yeah. those details.
Just per curious. Se. Yeah. It's curious because I think as soon as things got super medicalized, we saw a lot of the disintegration of like the trusting ourselves, our bodies, the, you know, mm-hmm. and I feel like that might have just been part of it. So it was interesting. And like I said, as far as like placenta encapsulation goes or consuming our placentas, that was not news to me until about 13 years ago, maybe less.
I think that it was something that was just kind of done under the radar. You know, these midwives, we lost a lot of knowledge during like the Salem witch trials. So this is something that I guess we can relate to the U.S. But during those Salem witch trials, midwives were, a lot of them were burned, and we lost a lot of knowledge through that. I learned that. And so everything was kind of done like under the radar going forward with that. And there are accounts of women that did it, that consumed their placenta, I should say, like in this, you know, 60s, 70s, and they just were eating it. So before the 70s, when they were being turned into placenta pills, they were just eating powder, or they were eating smoothies, or they were cooking it and eating it like a steak, which I think that a lot of times people kind of say that mockingly, like, oh, like, you know, I've had a lot of birth partners say, oh, like, you just slap that on the grill and cook it like a steak or grill it up.
Well,
you know?
Actually,
oh, they did.
Well, and I actually had a mom that did do that.
So
early on, even in my doula year, she she didn't have the money or didn't want to do the expense that way. Mm-hmm. And so that's what she did. Half went into smoothies and the other half she cooked, and that's how she consumed her placenta. So it is a real thing. A little bit of salt, right? Call it good. Okay, let's jump into maybe some of the benefits. What are some benefits that women see from placenta encapsulation?
Many women, so a lot of this is anecdotal. There have been studies, but they're not large.
Okay, what happened to the large study?
Yeah,
there was like the
in
large
2016
study.
Yes, at UNLV.
What happened with that one?
They just came back. No, I think they came back and said that they were able to identify 17 hormones, varying hormones in the placenta. And they came back and said that after it had been processed, that 16 out of those 17 hormones were like physiologically available and that it could provide benefit.
But they didn't do any testing? Like, let's test these 1,000 women.
As a way to honor all of the mothers on here, from now through Mother's Day weekend, you can grab the My Essential Birth course and get the new bonus birth affirmations track, plus matching birth affirmation cards, and get entered to win one of 3 goodies from Dockatot, or you can be one of the first 5 to bundle and save, grabbing the My Essential Birth and postpartum course, and I will personally send you a handmade 100% muslin cotton belly bind with your bonus tutorial video, plus you get all the bonuses from before. The birth affirmation track, matching birth affirmation cards, and you get entered to win 1 of 3 goodies from Dockatot, totaling $247 worth of goodies. Head to myessentialbirth.com/get-started and join me in the birth course today. Happy Mother's Day.
Well, they did. They consumed their placentas and came back with results. And I think that they said that, like,
It
was positive. I guess I need to go back and look at that.
We'll look into that.
Yeah, I can't remember the results specifically of that. Maybe I have a little bit of mom brain.
Yeah, it's okay. No, I remember years ago hearing about it, and then I'm like, but then you didn't hear about it. So I thought that was interesting. And when I went online to even search for it, I wasn't coming up with a ton of information. So
maybe they didn't follow up with that aspect. I do remember hearing, though, that there was the 16 out of the 17 hormones were still, like, bioavailable.
Yeah, and that's after it had been dried and encapsulated. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and there are nutrients in the placenta as well. So there's a lot of minerals. There's B6. There's iron. I think B12 and B6, iron. Choline, and we know that choline is really important during pregnancy, and it's even more so, actually, even more so important during a breastfeeding journey. Mm. A lot of moms report that if they take a choline supplement, that it helps them just feel a little bit, they feel more sharp. Maybe I need to take some choline. Words. But there's a lot of choline in placenta as well, so it's kind of a storehouse, you know. Yeah. So that's a benefit.
Yeah.
As well.
What are some other benefits that moms would be looking for or that could be useful for them?
Yeah. So the anecdotal reports that come back from moms is that it helps them with their mood. So we always say that it can help support postpartum mood, help prevent or reduce depression and anxiety in postpartum, that it can also help to aid in recovery, provide energy, probably, you know, sourcing back to those B6 vitamins. If a mom's lost a lot of blood, that iron, that helps to replenish those iron stores, rebuild those red blood cells. I had a mom who told her provider while she was pregnant, she'd maybe hemorrhaged with her previous pregnancy or birth. And then in this pregnancy, her provider said, "Would you like me to just prescribe some iron? Just if you're feeling low?" And she said, "Well, I'm going to take my placenta. Do you think that I should also do iron?" And the provider said, "Oh, if you're doing encapsulation, why don't you just hold off and wait and see how you're feeling? And if you feel like you need that on top of your pills, then I'll, you know, send in that prescription for iron." So that provider was really supportive of that plan in that way, in that regard.
Yeah.
Regarding iron. So also with breastfeeding.
Yeah.
So I had a client who she was unable to breastfeed her baby. Her milk didn't come in with her first baby. And I don't know the history about, you know, if there was, you know, like problems with baby latching or hormones or whatever. But with her second, she said, "I really would like to try to breastfeed this baby." I encapsulated her placenta and she was able to breastfeed her baby while she was taking her pills. And then when her pills ran out, her milk actually dried up.
Wow.
So she was like, "This really tells me that there must be some sort of like hormonal situation with me that the placenta supported, you know, through that time." Right. She ended up going to her doctor and doing some hormonal checkups and figured out, you know, what was going on. But her placenta supported her through that breastfeeding journey, which I think is really amazing.
Yeah.
So breastfeeding slumps, a lot of times if moms are kind of noticing a dip, they can up their placentas and up their placenta pills and then kind of support them that way as well.
Yeah, I've seen some neat things. I actually had, there was a postpartum specialist that I used to come have speak at my birth course, and she talked about placenta encapsulation, but she had only found it for her fourth. And so all other three babies, I mean, she knew it going in, like postpartum mood disorders. And it would start in pregnancy, that prenatal stuff, and carry out into everything shy of almost psychosis. I mean, very intense, and for a long time. And she did all these supplements and all these things, and it wasn't kicking it. And with that fourth baby, she's like, "What do I have to lose? Like, yes, let's do the placenta." She did that, and sure enough, she's like, even without all these other supplements, even without like these other drastic measures she had to take with the other babies, she had a major change in mood. And her breastfeeding went a lot smoother. The amount of milk production, which I know if we're talking about stress and hormones and all of that, that can absolutely affect your breasts and,
absolutely,
and your mood and everything else. So I think just watching the two of those go together, and she talks so, you know, positively about it. So we talk anecdotal, but it's like we have women that when you're interacting with women on a regular basis as a doula or any kind of childbirth care provider, and you see the results for yourself, I don't care if it's placebo or not, it becomes worth it.
Well, and this is something that I've said too. If it's placebo and it helps, then what's so the harm?
It. Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
I think that if you are a mom who has ever experienced any type of postpartum mood disorder, you'll do anything to not have to experience it again.
Right.
And I had postpartum anxiety with my second son. Postpartum did not go the way that it did with my first. Mm-hmm. So I just figured that, you know, my first baby was easy. Postpartum was great. No problems. And then my second was a real big wake up call. And that was a really hard time. And to the point where I was a little bit like, "Oh, I don't know. Like, if this is what my life is going to be like, I don't know if I want to have any more babies."
Yeah.
You know, it was really scary. I did not have a good experience. And so when I started doing my birth work journey and learned more about placenta encapsulation, I thought, you know, why, if there's a way to help a mom not go through what I experienced, then I would absolutely want to support someone doing that.
Yeah.
Which is really what led me to wanting to do placenta encapsulation. And I think, you know, like I said, if a mom has experienced that, they'll do anything. And I think that that's sort of, if someone's on the fence about like, oh, that sounds weird.
Yeah.
If you've ever experienced something like that, then you'll do whatever you need to do to not have that experience again. And so many moms have said, like, it's been so positive for them. Like, I don't want to have to skip. Like, if I skip it, I can tell my mood. I'm more on edge. You know, I have more of a down day. And so to my friends and my family, if, you know, I don't push this subject with them, you know, people take it if they want it, you know, but I'm always like, I'm happy to encapsulate your placenta for you. If this is something that you want to do, then like, give it a shot out of all the things I offer, you know.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and the neat thing about that too is you can get it encapsulated or choose to freeze it for a moment while you're deciding, not for too long, right? Because it loses some of those potency.
And I think that, you know, as your hormones are sort of coming down, I think that it's more supportive in those early days.
Yeah.
So you have kind of this like around day three or day four postpartum, you have this hormonal crash. So I always try to get my placentas back to my mom's around that time if I can.
Right.
And, you know, one reason or another, whether the hospital won't release it or, you know, just depending on when I pick up the placenta, sometimes that happens, sometimes it doesn't. But the sooner the better is what I've found for most of my moms, hundreds of moms that I've done.
Do you think, though, for a mom who is on the fence and she's like maybe either weirded out by it, because if that's you, that was me. So I don't want that to, you know, stop you from maybe getting it done. And maybe just wanting to see, like, do I need it? Can't they just stick it in the freezer? And worst case or best case, you know, they never have to use it. Otherwise, they've got it available.
Yeah, they could. They could. I think that they have to consider the time of, like, picking it up, processing it, and getting it back. And whether or not that, if that's just kind of that hormonal crash from pregnancy to postpartum,
right?
Or if that is like something that will continue long term.
Yeah,
it's been really scary when there have been women that I know that have it just kind of spirals deeper and deeper and deeper, and then it's harder to get out, kind of that, like,
that makes sense.
Psychosis,
like catching up versus being on top of it.
Yeah.
Just like a contraction, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
Okay, I like that. We're going to come back to that a little bit later, actually. I wanted to know if you had some personal stories that stood out to you. You shared a few. If there's anything that seemed like worthy of or something that would, you know, help give a ton of information to listeners. And I'm curious if you ended up encapsulating with this last birth for yourself, if you did any of that.
I did.
I love it.
I did. Yeah, in fact, my friend, one of the midwives that was there, I just said, previous to me being in labor, I just said, will you just kind of plan before you leave? I have a placenta room in my house. When we built our house, I put a specific room, and my husband was like, we should put a specific vent in there. And we did. So I just said, will you go into my placenta room and, you know, just get it on the dehydrator for me, get it going. Mm-hmm. And she did. And then when I had a break and felt up for it, I went in and I put it into pills. So
you did it yourself?
Yeah. She would have come back, but it was kind of this thing that I wanted to do that for myself. And I just was sitting. So after I'd fed my baby and he was just hanging out, I just went and sat in my placenta room in my placenta chair and
I love it.
Did my own placenta and it was fine. But I've loved taking it too. So that's been something that has been really special for me this time around, since I found all of these amazing postpartum birth things after my big boys, is what I say, because my baby is another boy. We didn't find out what we were having, and so it was a real fun surprise when he came out and was a boy.
Yes.
But I'd learned all these cool things after having what I thought was my family. And so this time around with this little baby, I did all the things that I offer to my clients, and it's been great.
That's awesome.
I had one client, that she just said, I've done this. I know what I need. And usually I tell people, if this is like your repeat time, versus following the dosing suggestions that I give you. Just do what you know works for you.
Right.
Right. Because it's made for you by you.
Right.
So the directions that I give people, it's not like an antibiotic. And that's what I tell them. Like, mm-hmm. you don't have to, you know, if you forget a dose, you don't have to make up for it. It's just what you're feeling is the most comfortable for you. So I had a client who said, I've done this before. I know what works for me. Like, what is the soonest you can get this back? Because I know that around this point mm-hmm. in my postpartum is when those emotions set in.
Yeah.
And so especially if I know that there's something like that going on, like they're kind of like on a high priority, like I got to get it back to them really quickly. Yeah. If they know that at, you know, day three, day two, whatever, if they kind of start to tank with their emotions, that this placenta will help them. And so most of them are stories like that.
Yeah.
They're like, I missed a day and I could totally tell. Mm. Or my husband, a lot of times I'll hear my husband will say, did you take your placenta today?
I love that.
Real gingerly. Yeah. So, you know, stories like that. They're all really similar. That like, I just feel so good. I haven't had any issues this time. Or my depression or my anxiety has really been reduced this time. So I don't think that it necessarily is something that cures all.
Sure.
But a lot of people report that
it's worth it to try.
Scales it back.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So did you notice this time, knowing from what it was for you last time, did you notice a huge difference? Can you tell when you take yours or skip, or have you not skipped?
I haven't skipped.
I love it.
I haven't skipped. I did notice, I think kind of as I was still kind of in that like hormonal shift, that hormonal roller coaster, I felt like I took too high of a dose one of the days and just felt really anxious.
So
and
yeah,
overly
what tells
emotional.
You that you've taken too high of a dose? I like that.
Feeling anxious out of sorts. So like, I think that it can go both ways, right? Like if you're feeling anxious and you didn't take enough, maybe take a little bit more. If you're feeling anxious and that's not normal for you, if it's not normal for you, right, then like tweak your pills. If you took too much or if you took not enough, adjust that and see how you're doing. People will report insomnia.
I was going to ask about that mm-hmm. next. Yeah,
because it gives you a lot of energy.
Yeah. So do you normally take them in the morning? Is there like a time of day that's
I suggest
better?
People take them in the beginning, take them morning, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Mm. I always tell people take it with a meal because there's a lot of iron in there. It can upset the stomach if there's not food, you know, going in to digest as well. Mm-hmm. So just to avoid any digestive upset, I tell them to take it with a meal. And then really they tweak it to what they know works best.
Yeah.
So I really encourage my clients to do what works best for them. And so for me, I feel like taking it in the morning is all that I need. I didn't really feel that I needed to take it in for my like long term.
Right.
I didn't feel like I needed to take it in the evening. I've noticed for myself that taking them in the morning works for me. But I always encourage my clients to just do what works for them.
Yeah.
So
I like that. I'm curious, is there anyone, because I feel like, and maybe this is a personal bias now, is there like anyone, I feel like everyone should get it, mm-hmm. unless there's a reason to not get it, which I want to talk about. But I mean, I feel like I want to recommend to every mom, like just like we talked about, what's the harm? What is the harm? Like, mm-hmm. like the at minimum, take it home with you and put it in the freezer for a day. Like mm-hmm. just see what happens. Is there anyone that should not have their placenta encapsulated or that you're not able to encapsulate?
Anytime the placenta goes to pathology, no more. No.
And what are reasons for it going to pathology?
Contamination. Oh, going to pathology? Sorry, I thought you meant like why you wouldn't be able to if it gets there. Okay.
Yeah.
No. The reason why it would go to pathology would be if there were signs of infection. Occasionally the providers will be like, oh, I want to see like what's going on. Like if there was something that was going on with the baby, then they might want to look at the placenta. I don't feel like it's very founded.
Yeah.
like a ton of evidence. but sometimes they want to take a look at it if there's something going on with baby genetically. However, that doesn't mean that they can't. That doesn't mean that the placenta isn't good for the mom. Okay. There have been babies that their placentas that I've encapsulated that have, different scenarios, babies like Down syndrome, babies that have some anomalies, congenital anomalies, I've encapsulated for those moms.
Okay. I thought you were saying that those were the ones, those are some of them that can't. And I'm like, wait, no. Aren't those the moms that need it?
No, they've been fine. There's really no reason to not encapsulate it. The reasons that you would maybe not want to would be if that mom has an infection in her uterus during labor.
Right.
That would not be a good placenta to encapsulate.
How about placentas that come out in pieces or chunks?
Just means less cutting up for me.
Okay. I love it. Okay, I wanted to talk about kind of overcoming some concerns.
Mm-hmm.
The first being grossness, and I'm just going to throw it out there, like, it was a hard pill to swallow. No pun intended. But I was thinking about it and I'm like, why did I think I knew of it. Maybe it was after my third. Maybe it was a conversation, because I remember my husband was like, maybe it was if we had another one. Anyways, but he was like, I can't kiss you if you're going to do that, you know? And I'm like, I know. I don't want to burp up placenta. Like, you know, like you have like a pill and I'm like powder, like, like, that's my placenta. Like, just, there were some hurdles, some mental hurdles.
Get it down all the way.
Yes. Oh, yes. Okay, I like this suggestion. Yeah. But Bonnie used to make fun of me here. Used to make fun of me, or not fun of me, but you were like, I can't believe, like, you don't do placentas. Like, right? Because everything else, I'm, like, super hippie crunchy in a sense. Like, I want, you know, all of these things for mom, and I'm doula, and, like, he has to do all the things, and poop doesn't bother me, and I'll watch you get stitched up. It's fine.
Yeah.
There's something about that placenta, and it is a hard. Anyway, so I thought, if it's me, like, I know I'm not alone. I know that there's other moms that are going to have to, like, do I really want to think about this going into my mouth? Mm-hmm. And so, and the husbands too, because I do think, I'm like, oh, but I did have postpartum depression and I did have some issues with breastfeeding before. So I kind of wish I would have done it anyways.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just wanted to talk about what are some advice to get over some of those hurdles for ourselves and for our birth partners?
Well, I would first say to the birth partners, like, if that's something that your partner wants to support them postpartum to prevent them from experiencing these mood disorders, if a birth partner's ever been depressed before or ever has had anxiety before, which at this point, I just feel like it's probably pretty safe to say that everybody has.
Sure. My husband's been on here to talk about it, which makes me wonder, I feel like I know the answer, but have you had women whose birth partners have taken their placentas? Like, placenta pills for their postpartum?
I've never heard back on that.
Okay. I've actually heard of a dad doing it.
Oh, so did it help him?
I don't remember. I think maybe my brain stopped at that. But I do remember, like, he had taken them too.
I mean, there's estrogen in placenta pills, so I don't...
Not to be shared. I don't know.
I know that there are women who will share them with their, like, biological sisters.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I want to go into, like, if you don't use them now, you can use them later, right? So, okay, maybe we'll just touch on it now. Like,
so I usually tell people, if you are wanting something long-term, consider a tincture, which is really easy to just add on to a placenta package. It's something that it's probably the most common add-on that I have for my placenta orders.
Yeah.
It provides the same benefits long term. It's more shelf stable. Mm-hmm. It's longer lasting. So it's something that I, you know, encourage. Use your placenta pills for when you need them now. They do deteriorate. They lose potency over time. I tell people, if you're going to store them long term, put them in the freezer. And then if you do need to come back to them, they're there. Mm-hmm. But if there's something that they want, you know, for menopause or something like that, to consider a tincture. I know that there's also reports of people using placenta tincture after hysterectomies to help with that hormone regulation, because you sort of, if it's a full hysterectomy and they take the ovaries and you're just immediately in menopause.
Right.
Those hormones are gone, which is kind of what menopause is. Those hormones are sort of like shifting and changing, right? So hysterectomies, post-hysterectomy tinctures are, it's supportive that way.
Yeah.
So long-term, that's what I would suggest for people. But they can save them. They just need to know that it just sort of is less potent the longer that they're there. I've also heard of people saving them for their daughters when they start their period. At that point, I just feel like that might be really less potent.
Yeah. You're saving this placenta for that daughter.
14 to 18 years, depending on when that happens for that daughter. It's a old pill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's interesting, though. And I am glad you brought up the tincture, because I like the idea of something shelf stable that's going to last some time. And I have heard of women using it during menopause successfully.
Yeah.
Hormone replacement is something that we do during menopause, or that some women choose to do anyways. This is a natural way to do that. So I love that. Will you talk a little bit about the safety side of this? So when we're talking about some concerns, right? So we talked about maybe it not being, you know, palatable. which I love the idea of drying it and all of that. But I thought maybe I could have you walk through, what does it look like once you get a placenta, the preparation for it, and then how you prepare and give it to a mom so that somebody that's looking into it knows the process behind it. And then two, I'm curious how moms can find someone who does a good job. Like, for example, having a specific space for a placenta. This isn't something that should be taken home and just put on the kitchen counter, you know, to prepare.
Well, I think that that definitely should be something that if they are doing it in their kitchen, it should be a very clean surface.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. I meant like we're not dropping it on our same cutting board and, you know, just going to town.
No.
So everything we talk a little separate. Bit about the process.
Personally, in my personal life, I really feel like I try to do everything that I can to, you know, support and help save the environment. And like, you know, lots of like, I make my kids use like reusable, like versus paper towels, when you have like dish towels that we use and, you know, that type of stuff. And when it comes to placenta, everything is disposable. We don't reuse.
Yeah.
Right. So, when I get a placenta, it comes home to me. I have a separate fridge that it goes in. It goes into the separate fridge in my placenta room, and it's either stays there till I encapsulate it, or sometimes it just goes straight into being processed. So for me in my space, I have a separate fridge. I have a separate sink. It has its own counter, and everything gets draped. The placenta gets cleaned really well, rinsed off. Then it goes on to being sliced up, and I slice it as thin as I can. And then it goes on to parchment into the dehydrator, and then it dehydrates. And usually I will let that go for 24 hours. I know that sometimes it can be done beforehand, but 24 hours at 165. And then after that, I continue on with the process of blending it up, goes into a bullet, a magic bullet, and then into pills. So in my encapsulation machine, and then everything gets cleaned.
Yeah.
So everything gets cleaned the day before, and then everything gets cleaned once it's in pills.
So how do you know how many pills somebody's going to get?
The size of the placenta. That was one thing that I was really curious about my placenta. I can tell that a mom is a really healthy eater with her placenta.
Interesting.
If they eat a lot of, I feel like less healthy options result in a less healthy placenta.
Which makes sense.
Less healthy eating options.
Yeah.
Results in a less healthy placenta. And So that was one thing that I was really excited to see, like, what was the size of my placenta? Did it look healthy? And Karina said, you know, yes to both. Like, it was a smaller, my baby was only 7'4". And so you wouldn't expect to have a monster placenta with a smaller baby. That would be signs of maybe some restriction happening in that pregnancy. And if you have a smaller placenta with a really bigger, with a bigger baby, then that just means that placenta was really efficient. Hmm. And so my placenta was like average. I was like, what? I'm not going to have like huge pill quantity with, you know, it was just average.
Yeah. What is an average amount of pills?
I would say like 200, give or take.
And how many pills do moms take a day? So about how long does it last them? And I know that you said that's variable.
Yeah, it's variable. So it usually what I'll suggest, and again, it changes based off of these moms' needs, right? So I will say start with 2 pills, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Well, actually 3 pills a day, breakfast, lunch, and dinner for the first week. Then back it off to 2 pills, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And then the third week, backing it off even more to breakfast, lunch, just 1 pill, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And they can change that. If they feel like they only need 2 pills a day, then great. Then that's what works for them. If they only need 1 pill a day, if they need to be taking 3 pills a day for the entire duration of their placenta pills that last them, then great, you know. So that's kind of hard to say, like how long one will last. And I think that moms can sort of adjust it. If they're like, okay, like I'm feeling really good, I want this to last me longer, then they might choose to scale back earlier.
Yeah.
Great.
Do you find that there's an average, like, most moms feel the best when they take it for a minimum of 3 months? Is there anything that you've
paid attention to that way? I would say that they feel their best the first, like, it sets them up for a really good extended postpartum if they're taking it consistently that first month.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's neat.
Different for everybody, but that would be maybe a good average.
Yeah. Okay. Before we get off of here, I just want to take a moment and talk about COVID and placentas, because we had a really neat back and forth on text message. It made me very interested. So will you talk a bit about what you've seen from, did you have COVID during pregnancy? Or was it just prior and after?
It was before and after. I don't know how I dodged that bullet. I'm really grateful.
Yeah. but you've noticed some things.
Yeah.
Specific to placentas, if mom has had COVID during pregnancy. And I'm curious to know, because there's also, right, some studies and things that show a mom that's had it first, second trimester versus the third trimester, and if you've noticed a difference on those placentas that have had it while the placenta's growing versus when it's kind of done.
Yeah, so there have been a few placentas. In the beginning, there were some placentas that I got that I was like, what happened here? You know, they just didn't look great. They weren't unhealthy, like to the point where I felt like I couldn't encapsulate them. That wasn't the problem. They just were, they kind of were like falling apart. They were really thin, really membranous. There's a lot of membranes, not a lot of tissue. And so just kind of, you know, some back and forth communication with that client saying, you know, oh yeah, well, I did have COVID. Okay, when did you have COVID? You know, and so what I have seen, in the long and the short of it, what I have noticed is that as that placenta is still growing, that first, second trimester, if a mom gets COVID during that time, those placentas just kind of don't look as healthy. I haven't noticed a difference for those moms that get the that get COVID in that like later third trimester, that they,
on their placenta.
Yeah, like it doesn't look quite as hashed or damaged as the ones that were earlier on.
The placentas that you've gotten that have looked a little irregular,
worse for wear,
yes, a little worn out, those moms, are you aware, and I might be asking questions that you just don't have answers to, are you aware of, was baby premature, was a cesarean section, did they get induced early because of complications, have you noticed any patterns that way?
The majority of them have ended up being induced because of high blood pressure preeclampsia symptoms. Right. And I think that there were a few of those babies, and it's hard to say that, was it because they were induced early? And they weren't like drastically early, I guess I should say. Like it was like within like term, you know. But those babies were a little bit like on the smaller side.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, that's pretty consistent with at least what we're hearing and what we're reading. So I think it clearly makes sense. Like if we have an opportunity to avoid or do our best to not get COVID during those early months, we're going to likely see better outcomes for mom and baby when it's time to have a baby. So would you say
just the whole pregnancy? Just don't get it.
I was going to say, because I'm like, would you say when you hit that third trimester, you're like, be free? You
know? No. Don't be free.
Don't be free.
Don't be free with your COVID.
Don't. No. I mean, I think it's super important to not, it's not about quarantining and staying away from everybody and all that. Like human connection is a very real thing that we need. Be cautious.
Be cautious. Yeah. Be careful. So. And I think that there's also something to be said for nutrition playing a role as well. You know, continue to eat healthy. Even if you get COVID, it doesn't mean you like throw it out the window and just like always.
This isn't going to be good anyway.
Give me all the Burger King. I don't know. Just, yeah, like just. You know, vitamin E is really good for that placenta. Vitamin C is really good for placenta. So just make sure that like you're eating nutritious foods. The supplements that you're taking are good quality supplements. Omegas, those are really healthy, good, important. They play important roles in pregnancy, development of baby.
Yeah.
For moms. Yeah. Mom brain.
Choline.
Choline. Yes. Take your choline, everybody.
Okay. Thank you for your time. Thank you for being here, your wisdom. Guys, I'm so excited for you to listen to this. Also, you are a placenta encapsulation specialist. She's got her own room that she built into her house. So do you want to share a little bit about where people can find you if they're in the Utah area? Where's your, how far do you go?
You know, there have been moms that I have worked out, like I had a client who was like, I just really need this done, but I live in Price, and so you know we worked it out that somebody drove it up and then I mailed it back.
I love it. So if you're in northern Utah, give Bonnie a call or text or whatever. So how can they reach you? Give me all the things.
So they can go to my website, bellissimobirth.com.
Will you spell that?
B-E-L-L-I-S-S-I-M-O, birth, B-I-R-T-H.com.
Thank you.
And there's actually, so I have a placenta page. They can go on the placenta page and it kind of breaks everything down, pricing, what, you know, what that, what it's going to look like, the process, pick up, drop off, whatever. And then they can actually just fill out that, the order form there. And then it automatically comes through. They're added to my calendar. And then I, sometimes I see them. Sometimes I don't. Sometimes I, it was more exciting when I would get to like actually meet the client when I would go to pick it up. But now because of COVID, I've just been relegated to the front doors.
I love it.
So usually I see the birth partner.
Yeah,
I'm grateful it's still an option.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, so you heard it here. If you're looking for placenta encapsulation, you're in northern Utah, I want you guys to reach out to Bonnie. She's incredible. Thank you again for your time.
Yeah.
That's it for this week, but make sure you subscribe to the podcast so that you get notifications first as I drop a new episode every week. And don't forget to head over to myessentialbirth.com for all of the free downloads mentioned here and to join the birth course and community serving pregnant moms just like you. If you enjoyed this and other episodes, I would love it if you would take a few minutes to leave a review on Apple Podcasts. I read every single one and include one at the beginning of each episode. See you next week.